Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
In the dark, I fed my dream.
Welcome to episode 462 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on this earth that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Oh, good to be here with everybody today, the day after this holiday weekend. Well, this episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. And TPC, Tango Papa Charlie, will get you 5% off. If you want to be there live, wonderful. We got tickets online for that. If you want to be there virtually, we got that covered too. So be there, be square. TPC will get you 5% off. Also, Nessa's Hemp. Yeah, I've been using that stuff pretty much every single day for months and months and months now because it does make a difference, especially with my sleep. So Perma will get you 10% off. You know, it also, it's really good. If you got to be around a bunch of people that are going to try your patients, you might want to take a dropper full of that stuff before you go around them. All right, y'all, I'm going to be riding solo today. William is in transit right now, so he can't be on here with us. All right, I want to thank everybody in the chat here. If you have any questions, make sure you put them in capital letters so I can see them with these birth control glasses. So, all right, I'll just jump right into it. Man, am I the only one out there that just kind of wasn't feeling it this whole 4th of July? I mean, judging by that fair that they had in D.C., I mean, apparently a whole, I think I saw 12 people out there at this thing. 12, maybe 20? And I'm sitting here watching Dr. Oz lie, and, you know, he's on there, he's on the stage, and he's like, wow, look at this crowd. And then somebody else with the camera's like pointing around like, dude, what are you talking about? There's like maybe 15 people out of here. Anyway, I don't think that I'm the only one not feeling it. I'm wondering how many other people. Yeah. Well, oh, somebody from Western Permaculture Healing, Western Massachusetts. Yeah, I got family over there in Western Massachusetts. So, yeah, you know, speaking of Western Massachusetts or all of Massachusetts, where all of this began, you know, some of the biggest, you know, people like John Adams, man, they were, you know, Samuel Adams, you know, they were cousins, man, and they were the forefront of this whole thing. And just feels like everything's just, I don't know, man. I'm just wondering, let me know in the chat, folks, are you guys with it? Because I remember the bicentennial. I was a little sprout at that time, but I still remember how big a deal it was growing up. And they had all these commemorative things on certain things. And I remember it just being a really, really big deal back in 1976. Here we are 50 years later. And wow, it just, I don't know about y'all, but man, I'm just not feeling it. Feels like everything is just not what the founding fathers would want it to be, especially you don't have to go that far back to look at it. But considering how bastardized they have our history, it's a wonder most people don't even know about it. I mean, for example, let me just hit this one up, y'all, real quick. So everybody says we fought the revolution over no taxation without representation. You know, it's kind of absurd when you stop to think about it. Let me ask everybody out there, when is the last time you ever made a list of grievances and buried the most important thing that you had to say about your grievances in the middle of a document? Because if you go there and read it, you'll find out number 17, if I'm not mistaken on the list, is no taxation without representation. In most cases, in every single example I could ever think of throughout history, if you had a list of grievances, you're going to put the most important thing either at the very beginning or at the end to put an exclamation point on it. And in a lot of cases, you'll reiterate it at the beginning and end. But why is no taxation without representation number 17 on the list? And nobody seems to know that. go read the document for yourself, folks. I came out with this a couple of years ago, and then lo and behold, a bunch of other YouTube channels started cutting and pasting what I was saying about it. Of course, didn't offer any attribution, but I ought to be used to that by now. But the point being, when has anybody ever taught you that? It was no taxation without representation. Well, like I said, that was number 17 on the list. Another thing, 4th of July. Yeah, that's when the document was officially drawn up, but folks didn't actually sign it until about the 2nd, if I'm not mistaken, of August, 1776, but we celebrated on 4th of July. Folks, if you only knew, there is a really good documentary I think everybody ought to watch. Now, if you're brainwashed through American history like most of Americans are, you're not going to want to watch this, but it's called The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. And go there and look at the sources, look at what they talk about. And it's 180 degrees out of phase with what David Barton says, who, by the way, is just, I don't know, in my view, he is definitely not who he pretends to be. And I can give you a long list of reasons why. But anyway, go look at The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. It's a really good documentary. It's long, and it's just the facts, ma'am, kind of thing. It's not skillfully put together like a lot of other documentaries out there. But go and verify or try to disprove things like, you know, guys who recorded everything, like Charles Thompson, one of the founding fathers that you never heard of. He was basically the recording secretary of the whole thing, basically wrote in his own memoirs. There was, first of all, nobody had more accurate records of what went on during that whole time during the Revolution than Charles Thompson. And look at what he wrote about it. He was going to write a tell-all book. I mean, with reams and reams, it would have been a magnus opus for him. He was going to write this down and reveal what really happened during the Revolution. And then he writes, and I'm going to paraphrase it. Basically, he says, you know what? I can't just screw up the official narrative at this point, so I'm going to burn all these documents. And that's exactly what he did. So there's a whole lot that happened during that time. Whole lot you've been told about the founding fathers, whole lot of things that they've written that have never seen the light of day. But you can find these documents if you go to look. And those are just some of the things, you know, I just wanted to point out there. I mean, there's a whole host of other things that I could honestly bring out regarding that whole time, but most people do not know this stuff. And so we just blindly believe what everybody's told us about everything. Anyway, a lot of these guys, I'm not going to take anything away from them right now. The documents they produced, actually the Articles of Confederation is more what I'd like to go back to. And by the way, did you know you can't find an original document of the Articles of Confederation anywhere? Not the Library of Congress, not anywhere. Did you know that? Huh. People like Eustace Mullins, and you know, he blew the whistle on that. And there was a number of other historians out there that have kind of rewritten what we think we know about everything, especially regarding the Revolution, World War II. Everything that you've been told is what, you know, it's a lie agreed upon. And I can't remember who that dictator was. Man, he's from France. I can't even think of his name. But that's exactly what a lot of American history is. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, if y'all can hear that, I don't know if you can or not. We are getting another storm that's passing by. So, yeah. Yeah, so it is what it is. All right. I could honestly spend this whole show talking about a lot of occulted history, meaning hidden history that you don't know about. You weren't taught about. And there's a reason why you don't know about it. All those things on the dollar bill. I probably ought to consider another podcast to really get into all this stuff, because it really needs to get out there. All right, so some sad news here on the farm. We had a you know, a little lamb that didn't make it. She was one of the triplets that came from this same mom, and apparently, according to Michelle, it seems like any problem children we've ever had have come out of this mom. Even though she gave us triplets this last time, she's going in the freezer. Look, folks, this is exactly what you got to do when you have an animal that is not up to snuff, that is not, you know, cutting the mustard. If you don't process these animals or take them to the sale barn or something, if you don't do that, you're going to have a petting zoo. You're going to have a bunch of animals that need constant crutches. And that's exactly where you don't want to be, especially in light of the times we're in. You need animals that are hardy, that can make it, that don't require a whole lot. So anyway, I took that little lamb and, you know, put her into the compost pile. You know, as the great Jeff Lawton says, if it lived, it can live again. If it lived, it can live again. So that's one way you can kind of, you know, Michelle gets a little bit tight with these things, you know, and she gets really close with these animals. But anyway, I got her out there in the compost, and she'll contribute that way. So yeah, that's unfortunate. So let's see what else we got going on out here. I am trying to get out here and weedy, but every time I turn around, y'all, I don't know about where it is, where you are. I'm thankful to have the moisture, but good night, man. It's like every single time I get ready to go out and go, you know, get some things done, here comes the rain again. So I'm not going to complain, because I know there's a whole lot of people right now wishing they had the rain we're getting right now. So anyway, was going to get some weed eating done. Didn't really, you know, that didn't really work out. All right, so here's some other stuff. Michelle, for the last couple of days, really the last 3 days, she wasn't feeling really well. She got back from New York to go watch our niece graduate, but I'll bet money she was in a room with a bunch of vaxxed up people and she got shit on. And so it's funny, because Mike Adams said he went exactly through the same exact thing, and it had like a latency period. 5 days later, now all of a sudden you're coming down with some stuff. She really had it bad yesterday and the day before. She's starting to come out of it right now, but typically with her, you can't keep her still. I'm trying to tell her, hey, calm down, sit still, and even though you're not feeling well, and she won't, she is the worst patient ever. Worst patient ever. You try to tell her, hey, sit down, chill, I got everything. Nope, she won't do it. So anyway, she's getting on the mend right now, but folks, make sure you take those precautions, because the only time I think either one of us gets sick is when we go out in the general population, you dig? All right, so here's some other stuff going on, folks. Okay, it wasn't just Dr. Ruby when I had her on the show the other day. And by the way, folks, if you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. So I went and bought, you know, a few articles of clothing made out of linen. I bought some shorts, which I'm wearing right now, and I bought a shirt. I bought two pairs of shorts and a shirt. And I got this stuff that was pretty highly touted and verified. Just to see what would happen. Now, Dr. Ruby was talking about the frequencies. And of course, the highest frequency out there is linen. And then right underneath that, or some would say even on the same level, would be wool, and then so on and so forth. It's all your natural fibers. And of course, there is no frequency worth a hoot that's in any of your man-made fibers. So I said, you know what? Let me go ahead. I went to the farmer's market and I said, okay, I'm going to put on these shorts. I'm already grounded. Now I'm waiting on these grounded flip-flops that I ordered to show up. But I got on the linen shirt and I got on some linen shorts. Folks, I'm not even going to kid you. I'm honestly convinced that it made a lot of difference in my, not just my vitality, but seriously, I think it made a massive difference in, how do I say it? I mean, I just felt like $1 million while I was wearing it. So I'm doing more tests right now. Like I said, I'm wearing it right now, but I got a regular cotton shirt on right now. So I ordered a few more shirts, and I'm going to see exactly how this goes. I'm going to have to go down to the Five and Dime. They got all these thrift stores around here. I wonder if I can't pick up some linen in there. Man, I'm almost afraid of what I'll find in there. I'll walk out of that place looking like Prince on the Purple Rain album or something. Anyway, I think I'll go check it out. I had some linen years ago, but honestly, my younger brother took me to go get it one time. And I remember we were going to Mexico and he was talking about how great this stuff was. And I remember I would look at myself in the mirror and I looked like somebody that ought to be pulling a rickshaw in Calcutta. So I got rid of that stuff. I mean, I probably gave it to somebody else is wearing it right now. I'm wishing I had it today, but that was some highfalutin stuff. I don't recall it costing that much money back then. So anyway, I'm wearing this stuff. And here's another thing. When you wear silk and when you wear linen, unless you're, I mean, I guess a lot of women out there kind of know this, but guys typically don't wear silk and linen. When you do, it is a weird feeling when you go in public, because it feels like you're walking around naked, especially with silk. And it is just, now, silk long johns, those are my favorite by far. If you got to wear long johns, always wear silk if you can possibly, because it's not itchy on your skin, number one. Number two, they're very, very insulating with very little material. And you don't even know they're there. But honestly, yeah, I love some silk long johns. All right, so here's some other things going on around here. Still doing that experiment with the silica. Now, I got to be careful about how I say this online. Somebody else is laughing like a rickshaw in Calcutta. That's exactly what it looked like. I looked like, you know, like somebody just stepped off the boat. And I was like, yeah, this ain't my style, man. I'm a country boy. You're going to catch me walking around like this. But anyway, got rid of it. So here we are, silica. I've been doing that experiment and in the diatomaceous earth. I've been taking, start off with about one teaspoon, then I was taking two. And according to the people at, I got the idea from the people at the Human Garage. And then also in addition to that, they were talking about the best way to get some of your minerals. And I did some research on this, was through that Irish sea moss, which it turns out, 92 minerals in there. I mean, that's more than a lot of salts out there. Most of them, in fact. And I said, you know what? Let me go ahead and give this stuff a shot. And folks, I'm here to tell you, after a few weeks of doing this, I think I'm seeing massive improvement. Now, why am I doing this? Because I was listening to the latest interview that William did, and he was with Logan from Sowing Prosperity. They were at Logan's Market in Arkansas. And they were both discussing how great we felt in El Salvador, despite the fact that we were eating, believe me, we were not eating in accordance to what we should have. We just ate anything we wanted because you felt like $1 million down there because you have adequate sunlight, magnetism that's off the charts, and we were drinking really good water in most places. So they were talking about, man, how good it feels. And then I come back here, and I think a lot of you would have the same exact phenomenon unfold. Get back here, and then all of a sudden say, man, why do I go back to feeling yucky again? Michelle's vision had improved perfectly down there. We get back, and inside of 2 weeks, she had to put glasses back on. You tell me something ain't going on here. And a lot of it, in my opinion, has to do with what's going on out there. But anyway, back to the silica. So the people at the Human Garage, they got kicked off of YouTube for talking about, and I got, like I said, I got a tap dance around this. They were talking about how one of the things that they're dropping, everybody knows they're dropping them, aluminum, barium, and strontium. Okay? That's just what we know of, not to mention all the nanotech that's up there too. And they had talked about, and they had had a number of scientific people working for them to confirm that barium is basically removing a lot of the silica from you, and that this was the best way to put it back in you. I got to be honest with y'all. I got to be honest with you. I've been doing this stuff for about, I think, 3 weeks now, and I feel like I am feeling a massive difference in it. And I'm going to keep working for a while. I know silica doesn't work overnight, but I'm doing that along with that Irish sea moss. I'm using the gel. You can find some of that at Whole Foods or something like that, but doing the both of them, and I feel like I'm seeing a whole lot of improvement in a massive way. And now I'm also doing the protocol too with the fascia work, with the exercises and all. I'm doing that 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day as often as I can. And I really think I'm seeing a big, big difference. I'll let y'all know. I'll keep you abreast of what's going on out there. So I'm trying to figure out how this thing works with the whole cell salts thing and everything. I'm looking into the cell salts, and friends down the road hooked me up with a book, and I'm working my way through it to try to figure out. Look, the more and more I see, when I see MD out there, for the most part, this isn't in every case, but in most of them that I'm aware of, they seem to think it stands for medical deity. And in most cases, I think it stands for mighty dumb, because they dismiss what nature can do. And that right there, I mean, especially coming from somebody like me, where I don't do anything. I do not do anything. And I'm going to come to this here in a second in a bigger way. I don't do anything that's officially proclaimed. I can't think of anything. And certainly not with farming. Whatever they tell me to do, I'm doing the polar opposite of it, okay? And it seems to be working out pretty well. So why on earth would I consider doing that with my animals or my health? It was Dr. Joel Wallach who pointed out something I think all of us should know. If we treated our livestock animals in the same condition that we do humans, a pound of ground beef would cost you $200 a pound. Think about it. So they got to use natural means to keep all these animals. It's called the law of the minimum, y'all. And through the law of the minimum, you find out the minimum standards that you need for pretty much everything out there, kind of like homeopathy does to a certain extent. And then you work from there. So if you're not getting the things that you need, then maybe that's where you ought to start. Instead of saying, hey, I got this problem here, and the doc says, here, take these pills. No, I don't think so. I think Dr. Wallach really brought it home when I first heard him say that, you know, if we treated animals the same way, your meat would be $200 a pound. That is pretty astonishing when you stop to think about that. All right. So here's the last thing I'm going to talk about in terms of the farm news. And I'll bet money most of you have never heard anything about it. This is, and I'm going to read this, Trump's National Fertilizer Emergency Declaration. Anybody heard about that? Bet you didn't. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think it came out on Friday, of, you know, dumping day, when they don't want anybody to report it, especially on a holiday weekend. In a nutshell, closing down the Straits of Hormuz just happened to be, and we've talked about it before, had to be a really, really big problem. And I'm starting to wonder right now, I'm really getting to the point right now where I'm wondering how much of this whole oil thing is a ruse. Because according to their numbers, we should have been running out in certain places long before now. Australia shouldn't even have any oil. They were supposed to run out, what, a month ago? They still got oil. All these places, Bangladesh and a number of others, I think there's some skullduggery being played here. And I think there's a game that we don't know the full extent of. But one of the things coming out of that Gulf is going to be a lot of fertilizers, nitrogen-based, phosphorus-based, you named it. It's all coming out of there. So Trump put out this national declaration, National Fertilizer Emergency Declaration, that nobody's talking about. Nobody on Fox News or MSNBC or any of them. Nobody's talking about what that means for you and me. You're not going to necessarily see shortages to the extent that you're going to see in Africa, but you're going to see limits on things. I'm going to make a prediction that by next harvest season, not this year, but next year, you're going to see locusts that probably rival what we saw during the Exodus. Because all of a sudden, we're going to find out, probably in a big way, maybe next year, the year after, you know, we live in the United States of amnesia, so nobody's going to remember anything. We're going to find out that this is going to create a food calamity like nothing we've ever seen before. It's already there. Just, it's a slow rolling train. You don't know until it arrives a long time later. But yeah, national emergency on fertilizer, and nobody's talking about it. Do you not think that is newsworthy? Apparently, none of the prostitute media thinks so. And like I said, I include Fox News in there as well, along with MSNBC and all the rest of them. That should be front page news everywhere, but nobody's talking about it. Going back to what I said before, folks, I just mentioned a moment ago that I don't do anything in accordance to the national zeitgeist. If I see everybody doing a certain thing, it is a big, big warning for me to do the polar opposite of everything. And I mean, folks, when I say everything, I'm talking, I spent time trying to think about it. Is there anything I do in accordance to what everybody else does? No. And there's been a couple of times as of late where I caught myself where I might be. So I'm like, oh no, you better scale this, pull the reins back, brother, because something stinks. And this is exactly what I'm talking about, folks. So I said all that to say this. They tell you to go out there, go buy Miracle-Gro, go buy this, go buy that. All it's doing is putting salts in your soil, most of which the plants can't even take up. Because what these companies fail to tell you is that they get most of their nutrients. If they're going to get it from the soil, it has to be done at a microbial level. It means they hand that green plant, hands out a shopping list to your bacteria and fungi. They go out and get that shopping list because they're like, okay, I want to be fed, so this green thing needs to feed me. I need the exudates coming off this green, whatever it is. So I'm going to go, and then we're going to multiply to get even more of it. Well, what happens? All the things that are higher up in the taxonomy, they eat up those animals. And that exchange is what creates things that are bioavailable for your plants out there. When you go out there and put salts in the soil, which is what that Miracle-Gro and all the rest of it is, you are putting yourself back. That's why I'm telling everybody, ditch all that garbage. Make your own compost. Do it as holistically as you possibly can. Folks, we got video. William and I got video and video after video after video of how to do this in such a way to where, you know, no matter what comes down, you shouldn't even notice because you shouldn't be using it anyway. You don't need it. And it's only destroying your soil. So I said all that to say that, look, there's an antidote. And it's knowing how to make your own compost. It's knowing not to leave the soil bare. It's all these other things out there, folks, that are not difficult that our ancestors did forever and a day. But we do have something of a renaissance of people trying to rediscover this stuff. It's available out there. But sadly, most people are not going to wake up to any of this until it lands flat on, you know, until it hits solid in the grocery store. All right. So with that said, y'all, Mountain Readiness, July 24th through the 26th. That's going to be in Swan Lake, Montana. Yeah, get on up there, folks. You might want to see what's left of that glacier before it's all gone. The way things are going right now, this, I don't know, this El Nino, whatever the case may be, you know, whatever's going on, it ain't going to be there much longer. So if you want to get up there, go check it out. Plus, you are going to get some fantastic instruction. All right. Also, EMF Rocks, 10% off with promo code PERM. I got one right here by my feet. And right next to it, sitting on top of it, I got a grounding mat from Redemption Shield. You know me. I'm G'd up from the feet up, y'all, and that means grounded. 10% off with promo code PERMA. And then finally, Soil Saviors. We got a link for it down below, folks. If you can't make that compost I'm talking about, that's going to be your next best bet. All right. So let's go into the good news right quick. Okay. Amy's saying, question before I get into that. Can you please elucidate the difference between fertilizer and compost extract, please? And thank you for putting in capital letters that I can see it. Okay. The fertilizer that they're getting from the store, they're making it through what's called the Haber-Bosch process. Basically, nitrogen-based fertilizers, they, you know, guys over there in Germany basically came up with this process of taking that nitrogen, being able to put it in a usable form that farmers could use. And it was after World War II that a lot of this stuff started hitting the market. Up until that time, compost, manure, that was the way we got things done. And then, you know, it got to the point where it's become a really, really, really big problem. So fertilizer and compost extract, what I'm doing with the compost extract, fertilizer, just look at that as some man-made salt that you're going to put down there. Yeah, it'll help your plants to a certain degree, but they're not getting any of the stuff. Yeah, they're getting NPK. But that's all they're getting. You know how many other things that are down there? These aggregates that are in that soil cannot be unlocked unless it's done by microorganisms. Your bacteria and the fungi are the only things that can do that. So instead of just getting NPK down in there, you're getting the whole kaleidoscope of everything that's available in that soil. Remember those 92 minerals I was talking about that you're getting from Irish sea moss? Well, that's exactly what these guys are doing, whether it's sand, silt, clay, or the combination of them. It doesn't matter. These guys will flocculate clay. They will do all kinds of stuff to make that stuff bioavailable for your plants. And that is the difference. And then the extract, all we're doing is taking that compost, and to a certain extent, we're stripping off the microorganism and putting them in an aqueous solution. That's a fancy way of saying, you know what? I'm putting them in water. Make sure you're not using chlorinated or fluoridated water, because that's going to ruin the whole process. Put them in a 400 micron bag, squeeze it really good. Water should turn brown instantly. If it doesn't, you don't have good compost. Okay, that's your fulvic and humic acids coming out of there. Squeeze that stuff really good. I usually fill up the bag 5 or 6 times, you know, dilute it a little bit, put it in some watering cans, and then go out and hit these beds. That's how I roll with it. All right, so man, oh shoot, man, these questions are coming out of the woodwork. Okay, how would I compost or use pine sawdust for my sawmill? Okay, David, you're going to have a high nitrogen to carbon ratio when it comes to things like saw or sawdust. So what I would do is probably let that sawdust, I would leave it outside and let it age a while. That's the problem, unless you get some. You really want all of the woods that you're going to use in your compost, if at all possible, you want it as aged as possible. If it has fungi growing on it, that's even better. So I would age that stuff long before I would ever stick that in there. And you're going to have to use it sparingly, because the high nitrogen to carbon ratio is through the roof on that kind of stuff, especially if it's really fresh. So it's going to be something of a tricky thing. You could go out there and sprinkle it on the surface somewhere. I would go very lightly with it. I don't know that I would put that necessarily in my compost pile, not unless it was in a big pile with a bunch of other things. Or you could put it in an existing compost pile, just kind of go very, very, very easy with that stuff, because it will kind of take over and it'll cool your fire faster than anything. Okay, how would I compost? Okay, got that one. Let's see here. Question. If you wear shoes while moving the sheep, what brand? Okay, Linden. Okay. Yeah. It's hard for me to see with these glasses. Anyway, I wear shoes out there, because there are going to be some stickers and stuff on the ground. That's pretty much the only time, for the most part, during the day that I wear shoes. I wear rubber boots in the morning, And that's a zero sum game because, and I don't wear them long because the way it works is we go out there, we go get these chores done. As soon as we're done, we're timing the sunlight when it should be coming over the mountain. And we will take those boots off, take off every bit of clothing I can. And my pants are around my ankles. And I'm literally looking right at the sun as it's rising. If I possibly can, if there's not chemtrails in the distance, you know, we're cool above the house, but that's not where the sun's rising. So anyway, I'm barefoot out there. And then when I am out and about, I have these little grounding straps you can get from, I think you can get them from Amazon. So you can ground them from the inside of your shoe all the way around until it comes out on the bottom. Now, you ain't going to keep it long if you're walking on concrete, but that is one of the tricks and one of the tactics you can do out there. Another method is somebody else has this means where you can put like a rivet through your shoe. And I've never done those, but I've been told that those actually work. Billy, you're promoting StopWatt. We saw a YouTube sponsor. Yeah, apparently somebody's been taking my likeness. I was going to do a whole video about this. Somebody's taking my likeness and made AI out of it and have me endorsing products that I haven't endorsed. I don't know who did. Sorry, y'all, I need some water. StopWatt. Yeah, somebody else hit me up about this saying, hey, I didn't know you were promoting this product. No, I didn't. Somebody took my likeness and is out there putting AI together. And apparently I've been in a number of commercials I don't know about. And I certainly ain't been paid for it. So I don't know what's going on there. It's getting absolutely crazy. Juby Joe says, yeah, it's hot as hell in Tennessee and the humidity is atrocious. Check this out. Dane Wigington, they've been playing with my emails as of late, y'all. I want them to let everybody know this. They have been playing with my emails like nothing you could imagine. Dane Wigington sent me an email, 6 days ago, asking me to do a little experiment concerning the weather because they have been. And Williams talked about this a number of times on this podcast, where they're lying about what the real weather conditions are. Dane is finding out left and right that it is way hotter than they are admitting, and they're lying to everybody about it. So he was wanting me to do a couple of things, but like I said, I didn't get that email until today. But yeah, Juby Joe, you're right. It's way worse than they're telling people, and they're absolutely lying about it. Hey, did you mention the brand of Irish Sea Moss? Hey, Alabama says, no, I didn't. That Irish sea moss I use, I got a couple of them actually. There's a link to one when you get the hydration protocol from the Human Garage, go to their website and get their hydration protocol for free. They suggest a brand there. So I ordered that, but while I was waiting on it to get here, I went down to, Whole Foods. And believe it or not, the stuff I got off the shelf, don't recall the name of the brand, but it comes in a jar and it's a gel that's also mixed with spirulina. And I looked at all the other stuff in there. So it's a pretty good product. And I take a couple of teaspoons of that twice a day, three times sometimes. So yeah, I don't have the name of the brand, but if you go to their website, they'll get you squared away. Let's see here. I use mycorrhiza in my garden. Is that good? Yeah. Yeah. It's also, my man, Steve Hall in the house. Yeah. AI pimping along here. So that wasn't you promoting enlargement devices. God, no, that was not me. I don't know what's going on, but apparently I've been in a number of commercials that I don't know about. And I don't even think I'm allowed to do anything about it. I don't even think legally I could do anything about it. But yet a number of people have hit me up about that and it just got lost. So Linda saying it's 106 in the shade here in mid Arizona. According to Dane, it is much hotter. In fact, in DC the other day, I think he clocked it somewhere around 122. And the local media was saying it was considerably lower. Folks, they are playing games in a big way. They're creating that lensing effect with the garbage you're spraying above. It is a big, 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 big problem. And sadly, most people out there don't know, don't care, and don't want to know or care. All right, so I'm going to the good news here. Okay, here's one of the hidden advantages of intermittent fasting. Why timing your meals could be better than counting calories. Look, if you read this study, you're going to find out that in counting calories, number one, there's only 24 hours in a day. It's kind of cool and it's easier to maintain if you tell somebody, you know what, only eat something between this hour and this hour. For me, I usually don't eat anything until about 10 a.m. And one day a week, I'll change that up. But I usually don't eat anything till about 10 a.m. and I stop eating at about 5. But, and I've talked about this before, you got to be careful about being on the same schedule for so long. And Dr. Mindy Peltz has talked about this extensively. So what you ought to do, or I'm not going to tell you what you do, well, I'll tell you what I do, is that there'll be one week where I fast one day for 36 to 46 hours. I'll do that one day a week. Then the following week, I'll have 2 days where I'll just fast for 24 hours. And then every other day of the week, I'll fast for 16 hours or more. And then there will be one day of that week where I'll eat anything I want. And when I say anything, y'all, I've been taking that way to the extreme. It should be within reason. So it'll be one day where I don't care about a window. I don't care. I eat when I want, eat when I want and what I want. So a typical day may be first day of the week. Imagine 16 hours fast every single day, except for 2 days of the week where I do 24 hours and one day where I eat whatever I want all day. And then the following week, it'll be one day where every day will be 16 hours. One day will be 36 hours. And then one day I eat anything I want. You'll find out that when you do something like that, believe it or not, once your body is accustomed to that, you're going to find out, just like Dr. Mindy talks about, is you want to keep your body guessing, especially if you're trying to lose weight or something like that. If you're taking in one meal a day, your body's going to adapt to it and, you know, you're not going to get any benefits. That's why you want to keep it guessing. And that's one of the methods you can do. And then one day a month, my personal thing is one day a month, I'm going to fast for 3 days or more. So, yeah, folks, it is one awesome healing modality that the MDs don't talk about. You dig? Most of them do not and will never tell you about that healing modality. It was like Dr. Jason Fung said, you know, there was only one thing that Jesus, Buddha, and Confucius agreed on, and that was the benefits of fasting. Now, obviously, the other two I don't hold a high regard for, but Jesus is my Lord and Savior. And, you know, it's even said in there, when you fast, it is assumed that you will fast. And folks are going to find out that you think clearer, that your body's able to, you know, through autophagy, get rid of a whole lot of bad cells that shouldn't be in you. The whole reason we eat three meals a day is because of the Rockefellers. And of course, you know, it was people like Edward Bernays who wrote the book Propaganda that made you think that breakfast was the most important meal of the day. It might very well be, but the whole notion of eating three meals a day, that was never, ever, ever something that was only something royalty ever did. There were times where people would probably fast 2 and 3 days a week or eat every other day. That was not uncommon. And they were strong as a horse. So folks, your body is absolutely made for it. Don't let anybody tell you opposite. I mean, go out there, experiment with yourself and find out what actually works. All right, here's another one. Study links kiwi consumption to reduce constipation symptoms. Yeah, I know there's a lot of you out there that are clogged up like the Lincoln Tunnel at rush hour. You certainly weren't clogged up during Trump's little state fair thing that he had going on here, but I think you get the point. Kiwi is also a really good, you know, it's also low glycemic, and it's also a really good way for you to keep that regularity on point. A lot of good stuff there, but I'm going as best I can to try to eat whatever's in season, including things like kiwi. Now, I was going out of, where was I? I was leaving out of this last weekend, man. I was walking out of a hardware store. Yeah, it was Ace Hardware. Walking out of there, and they were like, hey, you want some free food over here? We got, and I kid you not, the guy says, we got watermelon. And I just laughed. I'm like, really? Really, dude? Of course, I don't think anything by it. And then as soon as I smiled, you could see the guy's like, oh, I might have messed up here. And I'm like, dude. Forget about it, man. I'm just kidding. If you knew who you were talking to, you would realize I don't drip like that. But the point being is I'm trying to eat what's in season as best I possibly can. You know, you want to do like an 80-20 split when it comes to all this stuff. Folks, I'm not an absolute Nazi when it comes to this stuff. And in fact, there's a couple of days, there may be a couple of days I just go off the deep end. But I'm trying to be as dedicated as I possibly can. I try to do what's right 80% of the time. And for the most part, I'm right. Here's another little hack I figured out, y'all. And this, I mean, it applies to me. So maybe somebody else might find out as well. I find out it was Logan that encouraged me to increase my DHA. And you get that from seafood and you get some from lamb and a few other sources. But by and large, you get your biggest piece of it from, you know, fish. and, you know, shellfish and stuff like that. So here's a little experiment I've been doing, and this has nothing to do with what I've been talking about, but I find out that I sleep, I think, twice as good when my last meal of the day is fish, no carbs, either just straight up fish, like it could be herring, which I absolutely love. Not a big fan of sardines. Salmon, yeah, I can eat that. My weight in that. But I found out that if I eat DHA in large portions of it, or not large portions, but make that my last meal for the day, I find out that I sleep light years better. So I'm still playing with that to find it out. But I mean, that's something I figured out for myself. And then zero carbs at that meal. So at dinner, let's say it's for me at 5 o'clock. I usually eat right before I come on here. So that'll be my last meal for the day. Tonight I had brisket, but at least several times a week. And I know you got to watch out for the mercury in some of this stuff. But when you get smaller fish, you're less likely to get a high mercury content because it's not bioaccumulated in these smaller fish like it is in things like tuna. The bigger the fish, the more bioaccumulation of the negative things. So try to eat the small fish. Anyway, folks, this is what I found out. If I eat a salad, you know, make sure there's plenty of fat in that salad, and then also kick it off with some fish. Sleep twice as good. If anybody else tries it out, let me know. See how it works out for you. But for me, it seems to be working like a champ. All right. So finally here, beyond the pomegranate, antioxidant-rich foods that deserve a place on your plate. They're going to tell you a lot about what I've talked about for before, but I'm talking about it now because a lot of these things are in season. For example, things like blueberries. I'm still getting currants out there. I'm still getting blueberries, blackberries, anthocyanins in all of these things. Strawberries, yeah, like William was talking about. If you got some June-bearing strawberries, raspberries are coming around. This is that time of year where you can get a whole lot of good stuff out there. So, yeah, don't forget about those berries, y'all. It's a really, especially if you can get them really, really local. But be careful at these farmers markets too, folks. And the reason I'm saying that, I haven't seen it here in Asheville, but I'm sure it does happen. These people are absolute Nazis. I mean, they'll be the first one to line up to go get a jab, but they wouldn't touch a GMO to save their lives. Explain that one. Anyway, just be careful at these farmers markets because there's a lot of them. And there's one that I'm suspicious of right now in Asheville because the fruit's too perfect. I know what honest food looks like that hasn't been sprayed in junk like that. Just because they have it pretty out there in the setup, look at the boxes they're pulling it out of. Make sure they're not yanking okay, you know doggone well they're not growing pineapples in Western North Carolina. So where do they come from? And if that's suspect, then I know everything else on that table is suspect. So just be mindful where you get some of that stuff. All right, with that said, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, too obvious to notice. I discovered the genius of eating watermelon with a spoon the other day. This solves most of the issues with eating watermelon, in my opinion. Either you're tediously cutting it up into bite-sized pieces, or you have watermelon juice all over your face. Why have I never thought about this before? I think sometimes things are so obvious we don't even see them. I've recently started growing microgreens in my worm farm. It has been excellent so far, and again, why didn't I think about this before? It was all inspired by the Permaculture Pimps video about growing microgreens in between crops and raised beds. Heat-tolerant salad greens are few and far between, but microgreens are harvested early enough that the heat doesn't even matter. And I had zero interest in the soilless microgreen method you see all over YouTube. And using grow lights when the sun is shining just seems stupid to me. And I just so happened to have started a worm farm in an extra 150-gallon fabric pot. It just seemed the perfect way to stack functions. The worm farm is just sitting there and processing, taking up space. You need to keep it watered and covered, so why not use microgreens as the cover? It's working so well, again, I feel stupid for not thinking of it sooner. But sometimes we only get the information when we are ready for it. And there are an infinite number of ways you can set this up and schedule your next rotation of seeds and batching and consumption levels. But one of the best parts is the roots you leave behind just become worm food. And the nutrition should obviously be off the charts. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider for need of permaculture t-shirts. the official pimp gear of this pimp cast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group in the Sacramento area, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, y'all. Yeah, I remember Eric sending me a picture, and I think I even talked about it on this podcast a little bit back. I think he was a little bit inspired by one of the video, or what made him kind of jog his memory a little bit was the video that I did of growing microgreens down the rows. Why? For the very reason Eric just talked about there. You can eat them when they're small. You can eat them when they're big. I prefer them when they're small because it just adds an awesome crunch to a salad. And when he told me, when he showed me a video of what he, or not a video, but a picture of what he did, I thought, you have got to be kidding me, man. This is absolute genius. Where half of the worm farm, folks, just imagine a tub, you know, full of worms. You grow microgreens on one side, okay? Every single thing a worm touches improved. I mean, everything on the inside or the outside of a worm is massively improved. Eric was like me, man. I was like, the whole notion of growing something in a sterile medium, you can tell me it has all this nutrition all you want, but I ain't buying it. Because I know, yeah, these seeds will sprout and everything. And it may be superfood in your eyes, but can you imagine what it must be like when you have it growing it in an honest medium? I mean, they tasted different to me. There is no way I'm going to sit here and grow microgreens, like Eric said, when the sun's shining anyway. So you can grow, you can eat them as they're growing up, and you can constantly cycle through. And like he said, you clip them off. Now all of a sudden you just fed the worms over there. I mean, win, 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 win. So how cool is that? So I did it one way, Eric improved upon it, and then who knows, maybe down the road, Eric will come up with another way of improving upon it. That's how we advance out here, y'all. This is how we get rid of the grocery store to the extent that we can. Even if you bought, now think about Eric's idea. Even if you were to take what he did and you just supplemented your regular salad that you had to buy, let's say from a store or a farmer's market, I can't even begin to imagine what the nutritional content must be on those microgreens. Because like I said, I've grown them under a light here in the room behind me. I've done that before. Yeah, you know, it's okay. But I'm telling you what, everything about them is light years different when they grow outside in an honest medium. And then if you wanted, you could sell them. So folks, I think that's a fantastic idea. So hat tip as always to my man, Eric. Wellness blanket, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Michelle will be hugged up in that thing here in a few hours. Like I said, she's not feeling really well, so she may be under that thing right now. All right, so man, let me just hit some of these questions over here because I'm seeing stuff I never saw before. Somebody says, I don't like sardines, so I'm... Hey, Alabama says, I don't like sardines, so I mix them with salmon and don't taste it? Huh. Never heard of that, man. I might have to give that a shot. And then Yells May... I'm sorry if I got your name wrong. I make sardine salad the exact way you would make tuna salad. My family's come to prefer it. I never even heard of this kind of stuff, y'all. Who knows, man? I might have get back in the game on this sardine stuff. I mean, I grew up eating sardines like nobody's business. I don't know, man. I'm just not, man. When you eat herring, kipper snacks, that's what some people call them. Man, when you eat herring, it's like, dude, forget a bunch of sardines. At least that's how I feel about it. Yeah, Amy, I agree with you. Eric is a genius. I think that is a fantastic idea. And then now all you would have to do, just going back to Eric's idea, if you did nothing but take that tub and then take half of it or a third of it or a quarter of it, you grew microgreens right there. And then you clipped them all out, you ate them. Then you use the next quarter next to it. Well, the worms are eating up the roots on those other ones. And then so on and so forth. By the time you get back to the other one, I mean, man, I just can't even, I would love somebody to test that. Probably Eric's on top of it anyway. Kyle says, I've read that rainbow trout has more nutrients than sardines. It might, but I'm eating a lot of this stuff because of the DHA that it has in it. And so rainbow trout, which I can get here, which I could fish for, the thing is where do you go to find a clean source ever since that hurricane? So you're going to have to go higher in the mountains and hopefully you can have some luck up there. Michelle and I have been talking about doing it forever and a day because honestly, folks, I know I grow animals out here and I eat them, but if it were up to me, I would eat fish 7 days a week. When I came back from Alaska and I came back with 200 pounds of coho and Chinook salmon and 50 pounds, I think, of halibut, when I came back with that, I mean, you can ask Michelle. I was eating it 3 or 4 times a week, and it was stuff I caught. Yeah, can't really do that anymore based on what we know about our environment. All right, y'all, so let me get into it. So the best trees to plant before the prices go higher. Why did I even think about doing this? Number one, right now ain't the best time to grow a tree, although I have. There's a couple of pears down there that I got on the discount rack. Homesteading pastor had talked about it, so I never really thought about doing it. It was out of season. It was a dead of summer, so there were 2 pear trees that I brought home. Both of them are doing well. They're not structured typical. You always fight with pears anyway. They're not structured great, but they were $5 trees. And I'm actually getting pears off of them this year. So that ain't a bad deal. But the reason why I'm talking about it right now is so you can start getting your head, and some of you have got to start ordering your trees now, especially if you're getting bare roots. Let me talk to you about some of the nastiness that's going on out here. I've seen it. Michelle has seen it. Here's what they're doing right now, folks. This is how sleazy some of these nurseries are. Not all of them, but there's a reason why I only endorse one of them. They're taking bare root trees, and they're sticking them in 5-gallon pots. And they're charging last year, what was it, $80? I didn't even look at what they're charging this year. For a bare root that they stuck in a 5-gallon pot, it is the biggest ripoff ever. Instead of saying, hey, folks, I can't even believe this has been done forever in a day. But what they're doing now and the prices that they're charging at a lot of these highfalutin places is absolutely insane. So if you're going to order trees, the best time, if you're in North America, the best time to plant that tree is not going to be in the dead of summer. If it makes it, you're going to have to baby that thing the whole way, unless it's something like a fig that would, you know, can probably take it. There's going to be exceptions, but by and large, you're always going to have the best success when you plant a tree in the fall. Or for some of you in Texas, when I say fall, it could be the dead of winter. And the reason why I'm saying it, the best time to plant a tree is when the leaves are off of those deciduous trees. That's because all of the energy is put down in this root production. There's Dr. Carl Whitcomb out of the Oklahoma State University that figured out, he was the first one to figure out that trees will be light years better if you can plant them, and you're going to have to baby them less if you can plant them in the fall when the leaves first come off. Like I said, in Texas, it might very well be January before you get out there and plant them. And the reason for that is they're putting all that effort all through the fall and the winter. Whenever those leaves come off, they're putting all that energy in the roots. So when spring rolls around, if you lightly prune them, they are going to blow up like nobody's business. My man Stefan Subkowiak talks a lot about this. So I'm talking about this stuff right now in the summer because you might, to a lot of places, if you're wanting to get bare root, which is always going to be the best way I would plant it, because your survivability is going to be light years better. It's more likely to be adapted to your soil than some big tree that you have in a pot where the roots are awful. Pick the smaller tree every single time, and you're going to have a better survivability, and it's going to be better adapted to your property. So don't be dazzled by this big tree that you see in a pot when it will be surpassed. If it even survives, it will be surpassed in no time at all from a small little bitty tree that you trained up. So I'm talking about this now because you might need to order your trees, and I would always get bare root every single time if it's at all possible. Or you might want to think about getting some root stock out there and grafting your own. Take some of the twigs off of the trees you like out there. Maybe, you know, find a neighbor down the road. Hey, you mind if I get some Scion wood off of here? And then do your own. It's not that hard, y'all. Stefan even teaches you how to do that. So I'm going to go through some of these trees that I think you really ought to get, especially in light of the times right now. Right off the bat, I'm going to talk about, let's talk about staple food trees. And I'm going to talk about, first of all, chestnut. Well, it's one of the best long-term calorie crops, and, you know, it's going to produce for generations. I love chestnuts. And right beside them, I'm going to say an apple. You know, it's coming up at that time of year where everything else is dying back. You already know my deal on apple. It goes well with savory dishes. It goes well with sweet dishes. Pear, you know, it's a reliable producer, excellent storage potential. It could be that way for most of this stuff here. One of the workhorses out there is a mulberry. And the reason why, folks, you can do Bill Mullison 101 and plant a mulberry above a pond. It can feed the fish out there in that pond, and it can also feed you. and they grow everywhere. Can't miss that. You know, you got American persimmon, pawpaw, peach, plum, cherry, fig. You know, some of those are with figs, you're going to have in the colder climates, I would kind of overlook that. They might grow, but getting fruit off of them a lot of times ain't necessarily going to be a wonderful thing. So unless you live in some of the lower country, if you're in the higher stuff like me, it's going to be more ornamental than anything. So some of the nut trees out there, remember folks, in North America, the hardest thing to find in nature is fat. When you're in the tropics, one of the easiest things to find in nature is fat. Now, why am I talking about fat? Because it's all about permaculture preparedness and practical living. For fat, you get 9 calories per gram. Protein and carbs, you only get 4. So, and then your body, if it's running on ketones, man, you can really make it sing if all you got is fat. So think about some of those fat sources in nature because it's harder to find up here. Most of us are going to think you just get them from animals, but what about the nuts? Hazelnuts, I mean, it's one of the quickest nut crops out there, and it doesn't take long to, you know, start production. You know, one of my favorites out there is going to be pecan. Excellent long-term that thing would be grown for generations out there. Here's my favorite that most people don't even want to fool with, black walnut. If you ask me, if I could only have one nut for the rest of my life, it would be a black walnut because, number one, it has the walnut texture, but it has that very, very aromatic, flowery kind of taste. And most people have never even had a black walnut. Absolutely my favorite nut, and there ain't even a close second. Now, can be allopathic, which means you got to be a little bit careful about what grows around it or not. Because I saw some that seemed to produce every bit as well around it as at Greg Judy's place. So, you know, you bring the right dog to the hunt, maybe that's not a problem. You know, hickory, butternut, almond. I mean, obviously you want to be in a drier climate for something like that, more of a Mediterranean climate. And then, of course, Chinese chestnut. Now, let me talk about some of those nitrogen fixtures I would think about right now. And you shouldn't be paying a fortune for them. In fact, a lot of them you can go get from seed out there from a pod, like black locust. Nitrogen fixer, probably some of the hottest firewood out there that you're ever going to find. It's one of its great virtues is that it doesn't break down. So you can use it as a fence post. If you got any kind of pollinators out there, your bees are going to love it. So you got to think about those things. Alder, you know, it's fast growing. It's a soil builder. Honey locust, I'm not as big a fan of, but it's a good livestock fodder and it's good shade, but man, them spikes are coming out of everywhere on those guys. I know people have, you know, managed to get some that aren't as spiky, but you want to be thinking about those. It is a good nitrogen fixture and the bees are going to love it as well. And then don't forget about those shrubs. Siberian pea shrub. Well, it has an edible seed in there that you can eat and your animals can eat. So you might want to think about that as well. And then plus remember every one of these nitrogen fixtures, folks, if you plant them every third tree in your row out there, not only is it taking atmospheric nitrogen, putting it down to the soil for the benefit of everything else around there, it's also harboring all of the beneficial insects that are going to protect your fruit trees and your shrubs and berries and everything else. I mean, it's like the good Lord knew what he was doing. How about that? Let's not forget about the medicinal stuff out there. Elderberry, willow, serviceberry, American crabapple. I got some out there. It's a good pollinator for pretty much every apple out there. And, depending on where you live, I'm going to suggest even moringa. You can eat every part of that tree. Massive medicinal stuff. I mean, purifies water, you name it. It is like the miracle tree if ever there was one. And I believe William sells it. I don't know if it's on Etsy or whatever. You'll have to go to his website and find it or his YouTube channel and find out. But moringa, I mean, animals love it. You can eat it. It's good for you all the way around. Medicinal qualities. It's like the tree version of comfrey to me. So be thinking about those medicinal wildlife trees and then timber and legacy trees. I mean, for me, that's not something you got to worry about here in this part. We got white oak everywhere, but you got red oak, white oak, tulip poplar, I mean, eastern white pine, sugar maple, river birch. There's a whole gang of stuff out there you can be doing right now in so many different ways. Celeste, thank you for the $13. Appreciate your content. My dad's favorite ice cream was black walnut. You know what? Same here. And you know, the doggone thing about it is I can't find none of it. There's a lady that makes ice cream here in town. It's my favorite. And I don't know how many times I was asking her, like, could she, because she makes these strange flavors that I absolutely love. And I was like, man, I wonder if anybody can make like a butter pecan, but out of walnut. I don't know if it would work with black walnut, but that is absolutely positively. I've taken it before and I've sprinkled it over like vanilla ice cream and just kind of, or coffee ice cream and mixed it up in there. But man, I really think people don't, folks, I'm telling you, you don't know what you're missing when it comes to these black walnut trees. And let's not forget also, of all the timber out there, if you can get a veneer grade of black walnut, I'm talking like 2 feet in diameter with no metal, and it goes straight for 20 feet, man, you're looking at a, I don't know, back then, I don't know, 15 years ago, that was like a $5,000 tree. I don't even know what you can get for it these days. I mean, that same tree would probably be, I don't know, 10, 20,000. All those highfalutin stocks out there, what do you think that's made out of? Black walnut. I mean, it's one of the most prized trees out there. If it's not number one, it's number two. And it's a real close fight out there. So black walnut in so many different ways. And then plus, honestly, the hulls on those, I'll give you another little trick that other folks don't know about. You can take the husks on those black walnuts. They're a pest to a whole lot of people out there. It's like this black ink that comes off of them. If you ever found yourself in a bind and you needed some worms to go fishing with, take a bunch of those husks, put them in a bag, put them in a 5 gallon bucket of water, or just put them in a bucket of water, mix it up in there, and then pour it on the ground and watch what happens. If there's any worms in those soil, they're going to come flying out of the ground like something out of an Alfred Hitchcock movie. I'm telling you, you ain't never seen nothing like it. Or this might allegedly be illegal in every state. I might have allegedly even done it. You could take an old onion bag, put a bunch of those husks in there from black walnuts, stick it out in a body of water with a string attached to it, throw it out in there, and then watch what happens. Now, allegedly, you might have a whole bunch of fish that are shocked and they rise to the surface that you could pull them in with a butterfly net. Deadly serious. And it shocks them. It doesn't kill them. Well, the truth is, I allegedly wasn't sticking around to wait for the option because I was like, okay, I got to see if this really works. So right there at Lake Jeanette over at the lake at Leavenworth, Kansas, near the VA hospital, anybody seeing all those fish floating over there? Yeah, yours truly was responsible for that one. So yeah, apparently they'll come back around. You know, they just be shocked for a little while, but it is highly, highly, highly illegal in just about every state out there. And most people don't know that, but you may find yourself in a position here in the near future where you don't necessarily care about what the laws are because you got to do some feet. You got to do some eating. Folks, I kid you not, black walnut will blow your mind if you take those husks. Like I said, stick them in an onion bag, put a rope on them, throw them out in a body of water, and watch what happens. You ain't going to believe it. Or fishing worms, you ain't going to believe it. So, yeah, these are those survival things that great, great, great grandparents know about that a lot of us no longer know about these days. So, yeah, it's always some. Yeah, Seaberry is a great nitrogen fixer. Mary Jane, thank you so much. Saskatoon and Juneberry. Yeah, I mean, there's some excellent options out there and some really cool tricks out there. So, look, folks, I want to thank everybody for checking us out. William will be back around with us next time. I think I got an interview this Wednesday with a gentleman who's going to be telling y'all about some mushrooms and some products that I'm actually trying out right now, taking them for a really, really good test drive. All right, y'all, I want to thank you. Oh, somebody's asking, when are you moving to El Salvador? Not sure I am moving to El Salvador. Like I said, folks, I zig when everybody else is zagging. So there might be a conversation about that in the near future. I may or may not. I don't know where. I don't feel the Lord pulling me there. And every time I make a decision, a stupid decision where I'm not doing what the Lord told me, 100% of the time I come to regret it. And I think I'm wise enough at this point where I think I've kind of learned enough of those lessons. I think I'm ready to start listening. So right now I don't necessarily have a, you know, it may be a plan B. I don't know. I really don't know. Right now there are some other things that I'm considering, and I have the benefit of knowing some people that are very much in the know of a lot of what's going on right now. So I'm kind of getting with some of these other people and I'm just weighing everything out. So, you know, looking to see what's going to work and looking to see what won't. All right, y'all. I want to thank everybody out there for checking us out. Like I said, William will be here next time out. I want to thank everybody in the chat. Thank you, everybody, for all your support. If you're listening to us online, give us a review. 5 stars. You know what time it is. Till next time, stay alert. Stay alive. Just boo, boo, boo.
win. From the smallest proud to harmony begin. In the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat, feel the fire and thrive.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.